Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
This is a monthly class I do here at Radharaman Vedic Temple on the Srimad Bhagavatam. We started with the very first verse, which was a definition by Vyasadeva of the Parang Satyam, the absolute truth. Currently, we are on the second chapter of the first canto, and tonight's verse is the definition by Suta Goswami. The scene of the Bhagavatam begins with the sages of Naimisharanya after the battle of Kurukshetra, after Krishna has left this planet 5,000 years ago. The sages of Naimisharanya have begun a sacrifice which is to last 1,000 years. And their purpose is to benedict the people who would take birth in Kali Yuga. They selected as their leader Shaunaka Rishi, who was the eldest of the sages. And they specifically wanted to hear from Suta Goswami. They wanted to hear what he heard from the first recitation of Bhagavatam by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit, because Suta Goswami was in attendance and Shukadeva Goswami predicted that Suta Goswami would recite the same subject matter to the sages of Naimisharanya, since Shukadeva Goswami is a liberated soul. He realized the absolute truth within the womb of his mother. He stayed in the womb 12, 16 years, depending on your point of reference. And so the sages of Naimisharanya in the beginning asked Suta Goswami 6 questions, and he has begun answering them in this chapter with verse number 6. Now we come to the 11th verse of this chapter, and Suta Goswami will now give us one definition of the absolute truth. Vadanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yajnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. So the first word, vadanti. Suta Goswami does not say, in my opinion. Vadanti, they say. Who is that they that he's referring to? Tattva vidas. Suta Goswami says that from those who have actually realized the absolute truth, they say. That is proper. Even Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, when he accepts Krishna as God, Parang Brahma, Parang Dama, Pavitram, he says, not only do I accept you as God, but Vyasadeva, Asita, Devala, other great authorities besides me, they also confirm this truth, Krishna, that you are the supreme God of all gods. So in the same way, Sutta Goswami says, those who have actually realized the absolute truth, because there are different levels of transcendentalists. One class of transcendentalists is aspiring to understand the absolute truth. One class of transcendentalists is actually on the path. And then the third class, they have actually realized the absolute truth. So Sutta Goswami says, Vedanti tat tat vidas. Those who have already realized it, they say, Tattvam yajjnanam advayam. It is one substance, one truth, not dual. It's one. No duality, advayam. Here in this material world, we come in contact with so much duality. One day it's too hot, then next day it's cold. We find good, we find evil. We find so much duality. But the absolute truth, advayam, one. It's knowledge that is one. But here's the amazing thing. This one absolute truth, one substance, is understood in three levels. Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. It's one, but perceived as three distinct features depending on your ability to perceive it. There is a very nice example. You're riding on a train and you're approaching a mountain. And from a distance, the mountain just looks like one thing. But as the train approaches more, then you start to see that there's not just one mountain, but there are trees and there are villages. So you see more detail. Then when you get off the train and actually enter one of the villages, it's a yet another experience. Distant, it just was one object. Or another example. Trees are usually green. Parrots are usually green. When a parrot is sitting in a tree, you may not notice the parrot at first because he blends in with the green leaves of the tree. But when you look closer, you can discern, oh, there's a parrot. So it depends on your ability to perceive. So Sutta Goswami is saying, the one non-dual substance or truth is one, but is perceived in three progressive levels of realization. The first level of realization is known as Brahman, all-pervasive, spiritual, non-dual, oneness. the spiritual energy. But that's only the preliminary or partial understanding. Like viewing the tree, but you cannot see the parrot, or the distant perception of a mountain, it just looks like one thing, but because of your distance, you cannot discern the specifics, the details. So Brahman realization is partial realization of absolute truth. Partial. It's not complete. Complete has to include all three features. Prabhupada gives in one place, Brahman realization is smoky realization. Sometimes you see smoke, but until you get close, oh, there's a fire. Where there's smoke, there's fire, but from a distance, you may not see the flames. When you get close to the fire, now I can see the flames. So Brahman realization is partial, incomplete realization of absolute truth, because it's distant. Now, if you are able to go further, you can realize the next feature, Paramatma. This subject of Paramatma is nicely and pretty fully described in chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita. Much information given by the origin of Paramatma himself, Krishna, who was on your altar. He gives us much information about Paramatma, the Supreme Soul. There's soul and Supreme Soul. The first lesson of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you are soul, not what you see in the mirror. Krishna says, first lesson, chapter 2, you are not that body. You are not your mind. You are not your vehicle. Yantra Rudhani Mayaya, chapter 18. The soul is sitting on a vehicle, just like I would dare to say most of you came in a vehicle to the temple. Your vehicle is now parked somewhere. You're here, your vehicle is there. You're not your car. You may have a Mercedes, you may have a Hyundai. You're not your car. You're not your taxi cab. You are different, distinct. When you're in the vehicle, it looks like one unit. But when you come out, now you realize. Separate identity. Same way, you, the real you, is distinct from your body, just as you are distinct from your car. I don't come up to you and say, hello, Honda. If I came up to you and said, hello, Lexus, you would think what happened to Narantara, he's gone crazy. I'm not my car. So it's also, in the same way, ludicrous to address each other in terms of this body, because that's not who you are. That's Atma. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, there are 20 verses which describe both positively and negatively what is Atma. 20 verses. But then there's something else, something different, Paramatma. And in the Bhagavad Gita, it is very clear. There is a clear distinction between Atma and Paramatma. and they are eternally different. Not that Atma can become Paramatma. No. Two distinct truths. Because that's not me. I'm just going to quote to you what Krishna says in that 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, in the body, there are two knowers of that body, or knowers of the field. You know what's going on in your body. I don't know what's going on in your body. I don't know what you're feeling right now. Maybe you have some pain somewhere. Maybe you're thinking of, I don't know what's going on in your body right now. So you know what's going on in your body. You don't know what's going on in my body. You don't want to know. It would be complete hell if you knew what was going on in somebody else's body. You have a hard enough time dealing with your own. You want to know what's going on in somebody else? You want to feel all those aches and pains and anxieties? That's God's mercy that you only know what's going on in your body. But Krishna says in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the difference between me and you, Arjuna, is that I know what's going on in everyone's body. And that's why he is Param Atma. And because Krishna is absolute transcendental, he does not experience the pains and pleasures knowing what's going on in everyone's body. He is aloof. He's there, he knows everything, but he is not affected. He's not affected. That's why this 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is so important, to know the distinction between Atma and Paramatma. What else is there about Paramatma? The following. Krishna says in that 13th chapter, Anumanta Upadrasta. I am witnessing everything that's going on in your life. In your heart, Paramatma is sitting and he's witnessing everything that's going on. And the other thing that Paramatma is doing, sanctioning, giving permission. Just like your children, especially when they were younger, before they went to college, you were the ones saying, yes, you can do this. No, you cannot do this. Don't you have to do that every day with your children? Right? That's what mother's job is. He's out working all day. You're the one at home with the children. No, you can't do this. Now you must do this. Yes or no? Yes. So Krishna is the same way in our bodies. He's the one who's saying, oh, you want to do this? No, not now. He is the one who is sanctioning, thumbs up or thumbs down. Right now there's a basketball game going on. Krishna is playing both sides. And he's dictating, okay, now you shoot and miss. Okay, you go ahead, shoot and miss. He's the one who's sanctioning, yes. Now someone may say, well, what determines what Krishna says, yes or no? Pious activities. Those who have performed pious activities, Krishna gives thumbs up. Those who have done impious activities, no, thumbs down. That's why it's important to always act piously, not sinfully. Otherwise, it's very clear in the Bhagavad Gita, Mogasha Moga Karmano, Moga Jnana Vichet. The non-devotees, the demons, Mogha, bewildered, baffled in their endeavors. Here's a classic example. Hiranyakashipu. Krishna was in his heart twice, as super soul, and he was hiding inside of Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu thought he was invincible. He had so many plans for his son. But in the end, what happened? Here's the picture. Thumbs down. That picture is telling you God is the ultimate sanctioner. Huh? Hiranyakashipu, time is up. Just like that basketball game. It only goes 48 minutes. Time up. There is. Time is up for Hiranyakashipu. Look what happened. Yes. So he's sanctioning. Now also in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 15, there's more about Krishna in the heart. One of my favorite verses. Sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivishta. Krishna says, right, again, there's five references in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, I'm in the heart. Five. Here's a big one. Sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivishta. Krishna says, I, aham, riddhi sanni, situated in the heart. There you go. Now you know more than 99% of all the other religions in the world because they don't have this knowledge. But we have that in Bhagavad Gita. I was raised Catholic, Christian. This is not taught in Bible. But you believe me or not, when I was 5 years old, I knew God was in my heart. That's not taught in Catholic school religion. But I knew it. When I came to Bhagavad Gita and Srila Prabhupada, then it was confirmed. Oh, what I knew since age of five, here it is. What does that tell me? In my last life, huh? I must have been Hindu. Has to be. What other conclusion can it be? Am I right or wrong? That can only be the conclusion. I was not taught this, but I knew. Then when I came in touch with Bhagavad Gita at the age of 23, that's where I knew, this is the real thing. Look at this. I'm being confirmed. God is in my heart. So, matak smitir gyanam apohanang. What else is Paramatma Super Soul doing? Besides witnessing and sanctioning, he's also in charge of three other things. Giving you understanding, causing you to forget, and causing you to remember. Three things he's doing to everybody. Hiranyakashipu, Krishna was in the heart of Hiranyakashipu, helping him how to become first class demon. Krishna was in his heart telling him, oh, you want to be a demon? Do like this. Do like this. You want to forget me more and more? Act sinfully, more sinful. Same thing for us. If you're a devotee, Krishna is giving you the understanding. This is clearly stated in chapter 10. Dadami buddhi yogam tam. Dadami, first person. Krishna says, I give. God gives as well as takes. So Krishna says, I give buddhi yogam. Buddhi, you all know that word. Intelligence. Yogam, the intelligence how to connect. That's yoga. Yoga means, some people think, especially Westerners. Oh, yoga means I do some pose and now I'm spiritual. No, yoga means the process by which you connect with God. That's yoga. Not hot yoga, cold yoga. It's not yoga. Yoga means a process by which you connect with God. Just like you have a cell phone. You have to get a carrier. Then you have to make a connection or internet. You have to be connected. Yoga means to connect. Connect to God. That's yoga. There are different, just like in the cell phone, there are different plans, AT&T, Sprint, right? You have different plans. There are different kinds of yoga. Hatha yoga, Jnana yoga, Raja yoga. But now in Kali Yuga, we have a new yoga, Boga yoga. Very popular. I'm going to have my own yoga, Prasad yoga. Just eat Prasad. I'll become filthy rich. I'll become so funny. Oh, Prabhu Narantara, he's the best. No rules. Forget regular, no four regulars. Just eat. Boga Yoga. I'll have a new name. Boga Yoga Anand Maharaj. I'll wear a big turban, grow a big beard. I'll be on the cover of Hindustani Times. But then they will say, he is not Hindu. See, bell confirmed. Thank you. Yoga means to connect. Buddhi yogam. Dadami, Krishna says, I give you the knowledge, the intelligence, how to connect with me. Now, what someone may say, okay, you said Narantara, Krishna causes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Why is Krishna causing me to forget? Yes, he's helping you to forget your sinful desires. Do you want to remember? Because you have a whole stockpile of sinful desires. Krishna is helping you to forget them. And he's also helping you to remember the good ones, which is why you came here tonight. Your presence here means you have got Krishna's ashirvad. Just by coming here, you have already been blessed. Because if you were not blessed by Krishna, you would be home watching the stupid basketball game or cricket game or whatever, watching Bollywood. But no, you were blessed by Krishna, and therefore Krishna said, go to temple. You have already been blessed. Just the fact that you came here. And the more that you look at, don't look at me. I'm not worth looking at. What do you see on the, there you go. The more you look at Krishna, more ashirvad, more and more and more. Because Prabhupada writes, someone who is sinful cannot look at the deity too long. They get distracted. They get fidgety. They look at... No, it's a fact. They're uncomfortable being in the temple. But those who are pious, they can spend time looking at the temple, the altar. Everybody chant the Maha Mantra, please.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Krishna.
So, we have discussed now two levels of absolute truth. For those who came late, it's all right. For those who came late, tonight's verse is the definition of the absolute truth by Sutta Goswami. And he says that it is non-dual truth, non-dual substance, one, but is understood according to three levels of perception. The first level of perception was the all-pervasive Brahman, spiritual energy, oneness. We just got finished discussing the second level, Param Atma, God within everyone's heart. And he does different functions, which we already discussed. Now we come to the third, final, ultimate perception of the Absolute Truth. As I said earlier, Brahman realization is partial realization of the Absolute Truth, and so is Param Atma. That's also partial realization of the Absolute Truth. Because remember, it's one item perceived depending on your ability to penetrate or understand. So now we come to the ultimate feature of the Absolute. And what was the word used? Bhagavan. That is the ultimate feature of the Absolute Truth. Bhagavan. Van means possessor of. Just like Indra is known as Meghavan, the possessor of clouds, yes? We always remember that when we celebrate Govardhan Puja, because Indra called Sangvartaka, the clouds of destruction. The clouds are under his control. In the Bhagavad Gita, there is this phrase, Jnanavan, possessor of knowledge. So here we have this word, Bhagavan, possessor of opulence. Bhaga. And the father of Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva's father is Parashara Muni. Vyasadeva's mother is Satyavati. So Parashara was a great sage, and he gives a nice definition of Bhagavan. Very nice. So what is that verse? Aishvarasya samagrasya viryasya yashasa sriya jnana vairagyos chaiva shanam bhaga itingana. Sanskrit shlokas are very nice. I learned that shloka in 1973. And I have not forgotten it. I love, when I found that shloka, I said, I want to know this shloka. It was one of the first things I learned in Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada discussed the six opulences of the Godhead, but he didn't give the verse. Then there was a Back to Godhead magazine, and Prabhupada quoted the verse in a lecture. That lecture was transcribed in the Back to Godhead magazine. And I said, oh, now I have the shloka. So I immediately memorized it. 1973. What did I just get finished saying? From me comes knowledge, remembrance. The ability for me to remember is not my ability. The ability is a gift from Krishna. It's a gift. If I take credit, oh, I remember because I'm so great. What will Krishna immediately do? That's right. He'll take it away. I've had so much experience. As soon as I get puffed up, what does Krishna do? He takes away. Therefore, I always begin my lectures, Trinadapi Sunichena, just to remind myself, don't get crazy. Remain meek and humble. So Bhagavan possesses six opulences. These opulences he possesses simultaneously to an unlimited degree. Therefore, in the next chapter, there will be a verse. Again, Bhagavan will appear. That verse in the next chapter is the root, you could say, of the Bhagavatam. Ete changsakala pumsas. Here it is. Krishnas tu Bhagavan swayam. That's another lecture coming up down the road. But this word Bhagavan is very important. It's the ultimate phase of the Absolute Truth. And Bhagavan is the possessor of all these opulences unlimitedly at the same time. We also have opulences. But none of us can claim I have all of them. And neither, even if you did have all of them, you cannot claim that you have them unlimitedly. Because I'd first of all want to see your bank account. None of you here are thinking my bank account is unlimited. You wish it was. But you know you can't say that. You know it. Because even if you did, the government would take 90% of it. But suffice it to say, you all know. So the first word, Aishvarasya. Aishvarasya means Bhagavan has all the wealth. All of it. Unlimitedly. Unlimited wealth. Aishvarasya Samagrasya Viryasya. He has unlimited power. He does not have to work out at the gym or take steroids. Krishna demonstrated that when he was 1 month old in the lap of his mother when Putana came and tried to kill him. Krishna demonstrated that he did not have to go to the mystic yoga factory to become God. He was already Bhagavan as a 1 month old child, able to kill Putana. Putana had already killed hundreds of babies, but she could not kill Krishna. Why? Because he has all strength. Also, at the age of 7, Krishna lifted the hill known as Govardhan, held it 7 days, 7 nights, just with his pinky. Huh? The description of the Bhagavatam is, just like a child may pick a mushroom and hold it effortlessly. Any child can do that. Krishna was holding up Govardhan Hill effortlessly. So he has unlimited strength. Unlimited. Viryasya Yashasha, fame. Krishna's famous not only in India, thanks to Prabhupada, Krishna is now famous in America. All over the world. Yes. If you travel, you'll see how famous Krishna is. I go to South America. They also know about Krishna. Kakarni, you've done a lot of traveling around the world, right? Everywhere you go, somebody knows about Krishna. And that's this earth planet. Heavenly planets, they know about Krishna. So he has all fame. Yasya Sasriya. Let's ask Radharani. Radharani, how beautiful is Krishna? What do you think she's going to say? Radharani is going to say that Krishna is so beautiful that no other man can attract her. Same way with Sita. Sisi Radha Raman Bhagavan Ki. If you ask Sita, who is she going to say is the most beautiful? Ram. That's why there was no question of her yielding to Ravana. But I'm going to consort with this pig. And she said so in so many words herself. Whenever Ravana would try to coerce her, she would soundly rebuke him. Disgusting. Yes. So whether it be Sita or Lakshmi and Narayan, Radha and Krishna, they're going to play. There's even the description. When they were churning the ocean of milk, the demigods and the demons were churning the ocean of milk. So different things were being produced from the churning. And one of the things produced was Lakshmi. So Lakshmi, when she was produced, was looking for her husband. She looked at the demons. Unfit. She looked at the demigods. Unfit. But then she saw Vishnu. Aha! He's worthy. He's fit. And she gave. You know, the demons have these qualities. Demigods, they're nice, but not like Vishnu. So Lakshmi said, ah. And there are other examples too. Rukmini was supposed to be married to Shishupal, but ever since she heard from Narada about Krishna, that was it. And she said, if I can't have Krishna as my husband in this lifetime, I'll take 100 births, if necessary, to have Krishna as my husband. Kalindi was living in the Yamuna River. Her father built her a palace within the Yamuna. She also told Krishna, I have been waiting. I have made up my mind. Only you can be my husband. There are many examples of this. They know. They know there's no... Nobody can compare. So he has all the beauty. Okay, say you're a very handsome man, you're a very beautiful woman. How long? Those of us who are in our 60s now, what happened? Huh? We were young, handsome, beautiful. You can say. But most of us cannot say. Otherwise, why are we wearing the henna? But Krishna, on the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna was 125 years old. But you looked at him, he didn't look more than 16. Big difference. Big difference. Navayovanam. He does not get old. If I could live to be 100 years old, my God, I'm not going to look even what I look now. But Krishna was 125. He still looked youthful. He still looked like Cupid. New Cupid. Shriya. So he has unlimited beauty. Krishna is known, one of his names, Madana Mohan. He can bewilder Cupid. And Radharani, Madan, Mohan. That makes her more powerful. Because she can bewilder Krishna. Not you, not me. She can. He becomes so bewildered by Radharani, he can understand what's going on. That's another discussion. Not now. Then we'll get off track. I have to finish the verse. All right, one quick example. One time Krishna was hiding from the gopis. He hid in the bushes and he manifested two extra arms to make him look like Narayan. The gopis came. Oh, it's Narayan. The gopis paid their obeisances. Now Krishna was holding up two extra arms. When Radharani came, he could. And he had to reveal himself that it was Krishna. That's the power of Radharani. He can't hide in front of her. From the other gopis he can hide. Not from Radharani. He tried his best to keep up the two extra arms. Her love is too strong. Good enough? Yes. Shriya, Jnana. Krishna has unlimited knowledge. Just for example, I have read Bhagavad Gita in my lifetime cover to cover many times. Still, it remains fresh and new. Kakaniji, you read Ramayana every year, right? You do that. You get bored with it? No. It's fresh, isn't it? It's fresh and new. The knowledge of God is unlimited. Jnana. And then the last opulence, Vairagya, which is, in some opinions, the most important. He is actually detached. Ram was detached. How was he detached? When it came time to go to the forest, did Ram go, "I don't want to go"? Was that Ram? He gave it up, no problem. Even they were trying to bring him back and they gave so many arguments. Bharat said, "I'll take your place." What did Ram say? Nope. Ram was supposed to live in a palace with all comforts. He chose to live in the forest for 14 years. I did not read in the Ramayana any incident where Ram was saying, "Why am I in this damn forest?" Did you ever read that in Ramayana? No. In fact, he was very happy in the forest, Chitrakoot. Very happy. Very pleasant. Yudhisthira the same way. Yudhisthira at one point said, "You know what? I'm much more happy being in the forest than ruling the kingdom." Because he could be with the rishis and the sages. So if it's true for someone like Yudhisthira, what to speak? So Krishna, God is renounced. Guest example? Yeah, I know you want an example. Rasa dance. The gopis are described as the most beautiful women in the whole universe. What did Krishna do the night of the rasa dance? Left the gopis. Bye-bye. Just like that. He's detached. He's even detached from Radharani. Because when he left the rasa dance, who was the one pulling him? Radharani. Radharani was feeling, "I'm not getting special attention." So she left. Krishna followed. All the other gopis, Krishna abandoned. But then when Radharani said, "Oh, Krishna, I'm too tired. Please carry me." Krishna said, "Get on my shoulder." She tried to get on his shoulder, disappear, bye-bye, detached. That's Krishna. Same way. When Krishna, there's some instances when Krishna would defeat a kingdom or a demon, he didn't take the kingdom. He was detached. Ram was the same way. When Ram defeated Lanka, he didn't take over Lanka. What did he do? He put Vibhishan, installed Vibhishan. He could have said, this is now my kingdom. He's detached. No. I'll go back to Ayodhya. I'll be happy in Ayodhya. He's detached. A greedy, materialistic person, Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, they always want more, more, more. Never satisfied. They're not detached. Demon is not detached. Demon, Dhritarashtra, my favorite example. Dhritarashtra should have given half of the, after the 13 years, the deal was, they all said, you live 13 years, when you, after that 13 years, we'll give you what's actually yours, Indraprastha, half the kingdom. But after the 13 years, Dhritarashtra still wouldn't do it. Why? He was too attached. Because they all knew. Why do you think Duryodhana said, I won't even give them the amount of land on the needle point? Why? Because he knows if I give them even five villages within time, they will usurp us just by their potency. Because what would have happened? All the people of Hastinapur would have went to Indraprastha if they had the choice. Because the Pandava's character and nature is so stellar. They're so far superior to Duryodhana and his bunch. There's no comparison. I'll give you a choice. Let's say there's two countries, America and Ayodhya. In America, you can have Obama, but if you go to Ayodhya, you can have Ram. Where are you going to go? Anybody who stays in America, well, you get what you pay for. If Ram was living right now, would you not all go to Ayodhya? If Ram was right now on the planet? I'm sure you would. You would be getting your visa, your... You would get your ticket right now. You would stop this lecture. Sorry, Prabhu. And you'd be on the, book my ticket for Ayodhya. Right, because you know better. We would love Ram Raja. We would love it. We don't get Ram Raja. We get Kali Raja. United States of Kali. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna,
Thank you very much. It's been an honor and a privilege. I'll see you next month. Hare Krishna. Next month.